This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for tuning in today. As the debate over a proposed new basketball arena in Milwaukee is continuing, attention has focused recently on two developments. Milwaukee Bucks leaders say they'd like a concrete plan to be on the table by the end of the year to satisfy NBA officials. The league has told the team that the BMO Harris-Bradley Center must be replaced or upgraded by 2017, or the team could move to another city.
The Bucks have reportedly focused their attention on acquiring several properties near the Bradley Center, including the headquarters of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the UWM Panther Arena, and potentially the Milwaukee Theater as the spot for a new arena. At the same time, some are pushing for a so-called jock tax, which would designate income tax revenues from basketball players as one source for funding the arena's construction.
The organization Common Ground has been on the record as opposing public money to build a new sports arena, calling instead for more public dollars to support youth sports facilities, parks, and playgrounds, an initiative they call Fair Play. But until now, the group hasn't weighed in on the jock tax proposal. We're joined in the studio by Fair Play campaign co-chairs Jennifer O'Hare and Lloyd Johnson, along with Common Ground lead organizer Keisha Crum. Welcome to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
What is it about the use of public money in terms of potentially building a basketball arena that got you, I don't know if up in arms is the right way to put it, but concerned enough to design a campaign around this issue itself?
We wanted to see broader public benefit. We didn't want to just see building a downtown arena that only a small part of our population would benefit from. We wanted to see public tax dollars used for the broadest benefit. So the Fair Play campaign is designed to really revitalize neighborhoods and schools and spaces where people come together and play.
Well, and so at the heart of this, are you saying that there should be no public money at all spent on a new arena? Or is it a question of if public money is spent on a new arena, it also needs to be spent on these other things as well?
Initially, we started out offering this larger vision. We should expand this vision of building a new arena to include investing in the play spaces for our kids and our communities. Unfortunately, we found there wasn't a whole lot of interest among the decision makers in broadening the investment to include the neighborhoods. So what we did on October 19th, we gathered together about 700 of our people and we took a vote to oppose any public funding for a new Bucks arena. And the reason we did that was really to move the Fair Play campaign forward, to be clear that we are really serious about having this investment made in our schools and our parks and our neighborhoods. Does this mean that we're not open to meeting with the Bucks owners and other decision makers to talk about how could we do both? We definitely are open to doing that.
Keisha Crum, the idea behind Common Ground is bringing parties together to craft solutions that work for everyone. And so I'm going to mix my sports metaphors here. These are two separate goal lines you're talking about now at this point. This is, you know, on one hand, there are people in the community that think X, but Common Ground sees Y.
That's right. If you follow the dominant discussion as it's going, that they're the Mr. Lassery, Mr. Edens, Mr. Dinan, as well as some of our city officials are moving, and some of our state officials are moving in the arena of using public tax dollars to support a new arena, construction of that. And there's little to no discussion, and I would say none, about a broader community investment.
Why play spaces? I mean, there's some who say, sure, public money shouldn't go just to fund a downtown arena, but they point to this cultural needs task force and the idea that some are talking about making the arena just one of a variety of cultural institutions that public money could support. Why play spaces versus this kind of broad notion of culture?
You can just look around our city and see that there are inadequate play spaces and athletic facilities. Why should we use public taxpayer dollars to help build a stadium or arena for the Bucks to play basketball? When there are needs that are in our community, we provide a voice. We surveyed the different athletic facilities, and we surveyed the playgrounds. And they are neat, inadequate. We need to accommodate and make our athletic facilities and play spaces adequate.
And I think also in a simple sense that if we looked at play because the discussion started with the business community saying that they want to build a play facility for the Bucks. And so it caused us to ask the question of what kinds of spaces are our kids playing on? So there's a direct parallel and a symmetry between kids playing and Bucks playing. Now, is it the most important issue in our city? No, it's not. And we would argue an arena is not the most important issue in our city either. But we think that there's a parallel between the two, and that's why we, after debate and discussion and 14,000 people talking, landed on if the Bucks get a place to play, our kids should get a place to play.
So you would say, you know, because there are probably people listening who would say, well, I don't go to Bucks games and I don't have children in scholastic sports. So neither one of these things is something I want my money going to. You'd say, fine, then it shouldn't go to either.
Well, actually, when you look at the facilities of parks and playgrounds, that people that are using them are seniors. It's people that are the millennials that everyone talks about are playing Ultimate Frisbee. It's one of the, I would argue, few spaces, public spaces in our county that whether you are rich, poor, black, white, regardless of what side of the town you live on, has no admissions cost, and you can use those facilities.
In addition, even the people who don't use them are really excited about the prospect of these improvements coming to their neighborhood because they'll tell you it'll look better. And in some of the places, like I'm thinking of Lloyd Barbie in particular, our plan came from the community and they wanted a community garden included in there. So there's really something for everyone.
And at the same time, you can also say that it can increase the property value and at the same time reduce the crime percentage.
One of the areas that's being talked about a lot at this stage is the idea of a so-called jock tax, in which the income taxes of the millionaire athletes who would play at the new arena would, in essence, be captured and earmarked to pay for part of the arena. The advocates say that it's a way of keeping regular people effectively insulated from the whole funding issue. What about this idea?
From our perspective, I think that that argument misses the mark. That when you look at the way income taxes, so this jock tax is not a new tax. It's existing money that goes to our state budget that funds education, Medicaid for poor people with disabilities, and other services that our state has to provide for the most vulnerable in our society. And so when you talk about it's a benign tax, we don't think it's a benign tax. We think that actually the state is projected to have a $1.8 billion deficit on a conservative end. And that money that we're looking at taking and earmarking for professional athletes to fund a new arena is money that could be used in our state.
Are we, though, in a position where if the team leaves, we're going to lose that revenue anyway?
Well, that's an interesting argument. But there's another argument to consider. That we're talking about billionaire owners, Mr. Edens, Mr. Lassery, and Mr. Dinans, are billionaire hedge fund owners. And that if they would pay for the arena themselves and float their own bonds, we would actually have a win-win-win for the city, for the state, and for the Bucks. We keep the team, we keep the income, and that money actually can go back to, can stay in the state coffers, and the increase can stay in the state coffers to help. And the Bucks will stay here and the owners will keep their team.
Well, and one of the things that you have brought up on your website, the issue of blighted properties that are owned by Mr. Edens' company. Why do you see those places as relevant to this conversation?
As Jennifer said, that our Fair Play campaign is really about transforming neighborhoods. And when you look at what's happening in neighborhoods, when you have thousands, hundreds of thousands of blighted properties, it does not transform neighborhoods. And so as we were looking at this question of Mr. Edens asking our city for money, we think there's a debt that he already owes. And I'll say to their credit, we actually are meeting with Nation Star this week. They're sending representatives to the city to talk with us because this is a serious issue.
So let's go back to the Fair Play campaign and the proposal you're calling for in regard to the athletic facilities and the playgrounds. What is the change you're hoping to effect and what's the scope of it?
Another one of the schools that we have on our list is Washington High School. We've been doing a lot of work as Common Ground in that neighborhood of Sherman Park along the foreclosures. We've already rehabbed about 100 homes, and we've developed a group of people who are really interested in improving that neighborhood. They're working on the business district, and this would be one more thing that would strengthen and revitalize that neighborhood. And what we hear from the students and the coaches at Washington High School is how terrible and inadequate their facilities are. They can't host a home game there. When you talk to the kids, that's something that's really important to them. They want to be able to take the adults and the community and have them out there on the football field and feel that support and that sense of community. The track team there can't even practice on their facilities. If you know anything about track, you know that kids run now with spikes in their shoes and you have to have a rubberized track. Well, they have a crumbling asphalt track. So the track team spends half of their practice time traveling to and from another facility just so they can have a place to practice. So what we could do at Washington High School would really be transformative for those kids and for the neighborhood.
Do you see the Bucks and more generally a downtown arena as providing any kind of benefit to the community at large? I mean, because that's one of the central arguments that people who support building a new arena with public dollars make. It's that it's not just about providing a play space for millionaire athletes. It's about providing downtown jobs and, you know, the idea that our rising tide floats all boats. Is there a general benefit to the community at large from having professional basketball in downtown Milwaukee?
It's a patch of honor to say we are an NBA city. So there's no question about that. I think our argument is that the same shot of pride that this provides for the city to build a new arena downtown is also the same shot of pride of upgrading and fixing a facility at North Division, for example. And so our simple argument is that, yes, we don't disagree that that provides pride, and yes, it would create jobs, you know, and for the time of the construction. So will fair play. And we think that there could be a both and, not an either or.
You mentioned Golden State as an example of a place where an arena was built without public dollars. Are there examples of other arenas that have been built while at the same time accomplishing initiatives like the one that you're describing?
Yeah. Our sister organization in Washington, D.C. ran a similar campaign when the Washington Nationals wanted a stadium built, and they were able to leverage $500 million, which they used to rebuild the stadiums at every high school in the city. They put new libraries in those high schools, and they did sidewalks because those were the things the citizens cared about.
And so what was the process by which that came together as being a package deal, if you will?
If you're going to use public money for an arena, let's also make an investment in kids. And so our sister organization leveraged the council, which is more like the state legislature there and the city combined, to make that investment. And it was called Neighborhoods First. And I think that for the Golden State Warriors, that money of $600 million towards a new arena is in the process of being built. So there's that sense. And I think, unfortunately, when you look across our country where these new facilities are going in, the public is paying huge amounts and getting very little return. The owners walk away with huge money. I mean, that's the case of Miller Park. I mean, it's a nice facility, but when you look at who really benefited in the end, and the public is still left with a big bill.
How concerned is Common Ground at this point with not having the proverbial seat at the table?
We're always fundamentally interested in getting to the table to have a discussion, to negotiate what can we really do around investing in these facilities. That's always been our interest. And to date, the owners have chosen not to meet with us. They've been in the city multiple times and have had multiple conversations with people they perceive as the decision makers and don't see us in that realm yet. And so we're going to keep pushing. And we're going to keep challenging till we get to the table to negotiate for what we think, you know, is at least a fair shot for our kids and our community.
Well, and so what do you see as the next step?
Right now, we're focusing our energy around the city council because that's where we feel that we have the most leverage. And we know, although it seems like some of the decisions may be made at the state level, there are going to be significant decisions made here on the city level. For example, when the gift was made for the Bradley Center, they gave $89 million. But then the city had to spend $41 million on infrastructure. And we're expecting a similar request to come in for any sort of new arena here, moving streets and all those kind of things. There's going to be a lot of important votes at the city council level, and that's where we're really focusing our efforts.
And we want to stretch out to the citizens of Milwaukee. Use that phone number and call your local alderman who represents you and voice your opinion and let them know about the need to have proper and adequate athletic facilities and play spaces in your community.
And at the same time, there have been many in the legislature who have expressed grave concerns about taxpayer dollars. Do you see yourselves as having allies in the legislature at this point?
We're in the process of figuring out our strategies to engage conversations with some of our legislators, both Republican and Democrat.
Well, thank you to all three of you. Best of luck as you go forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Keisha Crum, Lloyd Johnson, and Jennifer O'Hare are with Common Ground and its Fair Play initiative. By the way, the group issued a statement about the jock tax after our interview was conducted. It reads in part, if the Republican-controlled Joint Finance Committee, Governor Walker, Assemblyman Voss, and Senator Fitzgerald go along with the jock tax proposal, it is nothing more than a Republican tax increase on all tax-paying citizens in Wisconsin. You can find their full statement and more of WUWM's coverage of the debate at WUWM.com.
Join the Navy and see the world. Well, that's what one graduate of the UWM Nursing School did. We'll talk with Rear Admiral retired Margaret Rakowski when Lake Effect returns right after this short break. You're listening to us on Milwaukee Public Radio.